these things that they're doing is an attempt to divide us as a community. But in fact, it's doing the opposite. It's uniting us as a country.
After immigration crackdowns in Minnesota, opponents across the triangle are coming together to speak out. Welcome to Carolina Connection. I'm Maddie Policastro.
And I'm Rachel Moody. Also this week, UNC Health is increasing barriers to gender-affirming care, reigniting debate over treatment for teens. UNC leaders propose deeper budget cuts that some employees fear will mean job cuts. And Buddhist monks on their 2,300-mile walk for peace passed through North Carolina.
Really crazy time politically and just emotionally, and they're out here promoting peace and unity and compassion and all the things that we really need.
From the UNC Hussman School of Journalism and Media, this is Carolina Connection.
Thanks for joining us. The UNC Chapel Hill Board of Trustees says the university has to spend less money. They voted last week to cut the budget $87 million. That's about $16 million more than what they had originally decided to cut last summer. The reduction specifically targeted administrative spending, and that's raised concerns across campus about potential staff layoffs. Henry Nichols reports.
Employee Forum Chair Rebecca Bearcloth Howell represents over 10,000 UNC staff. When we met at the law school, she was already emailing the administration to voice her concerns about where the cuts would fall.
In terms of the additional $16.5 million, I don't honestly see any way that that can be achieved without significant layoffs. In general, the feedback that we're getting from folks that are reaching out to us is a lot of concern about the stability of their jobs, about the community of the teams that they currently work on, about having to do more with less.
Service First is UNC's initiative aimed at finding savings by consolidating administrative roles across campus. The board increased the original proposed amount from $8.5 million to $25 million this past week, and they hope the university will identify these savings by June 30th. Chancellor Roberts discussed the possibility of layoffs and his reasoning for pushing forward the resolution.
Almost all of our traditional sources of revenue are either constrained or under pressure, and so we need to look for ways to operate as efficiently as we can in the near term. Layoffs are always a last resort. We can do a lot through attrition and through slowing down our hiring. So far this fiscal year, we've already saved about $8 million without layoffs.
He was joined by Chair Malcolm Turner, who expressed his support for the proposed cuts.
We have difficult budget practical realities and difficult choices to make, but we support the university's leadership in making those tough decisions to ultimately not only promote but protect the university's mission long term.
Student body president Adolfo Alvarez attended the meeting and expressed his concern with the lack of time to look over the cuts. Alvarez was one of the two votes against the resolution.
You do not blindside the rest of your board members and get them to vote on something that you just showed them. It said to the just president that the board is encouraging cuts in specific areas without relying on analysis or reports that say that it is the best avenue or that it is sustainable to encourage those cuts.
The savings could be felt by more than just staff, however, and faculty chair Beth Morocco says that teaching and research areas will also be affected.
We were already understaffed in many areas on campus, so it's hard to imagine that it wouldn't have a big effect on productivity overall and in areas of teaching and research as well.
During the meeting, Alvarez questioned whether focusing on staff attrition was the best place for cuts, mentioning other areas as potential alternatives.
Athletics could be much more efficient. Energy efficiency could be a lot more efficient. You walk around campus and you see buildings with all of their lights on at night, inside when they're locked and no one's in the building, when you're like, okay, well, what purpose does this have?
Bearcloth Howell and UNC staff await the university's final decision.
The Board of Trustees is an advisory body. Ultimately, the resolution is advising the university to make this additional $16.5 million cut. It is not requiring the university.
We should learn more about the university's plans to implement this proposal after the next Board of Trustees meeting at the end of March. In Chapel Hill, I'm Henry Nichols.
Advocates across the country declared that yesterday should be a day for no work, no school, no shopping. They called for a national shutdown to protest the immigration crackdown in Minnesota. On the national shutdown website, organizers labeled the Minnesota operation ISIS Reign of Terror. Several businesses across the triangle closed in solidarity, and student organizations at UNC, Duke, and NC State called for students to join the walkout.
In Chapel Hill, a demonstration took place on Franklin Street yesterday. UNC student Matthew Moyano said he was there to promote transparency and to show support.
Coming from a Latino family, I've seen what ICE has done to people that I know and people that I love, people that I hold very dear to me. And I want to make sure that everybody knows exactly what's going on and to speak up and speak out against the people that are doing harm to our communities, not just here in Chapel Hill, but around the U.S.
Meanwhile, Thursday night in Durham, hundreds of people chanted songs and prayed for Alex Preti, the nurse who was killed by federal agents last weekend. As Anthony Guerra Flores reports, they demanded accountability.
Go in peace, go in power, stick around for a little bit.
In below freezing temperatures, more than 100 people rallied outside Durham's Veterans Affairs Medical Center in the aftermath of VA nurse Alex Preti's killing in Minneapolis. Among chants, calls for action, and cars honking in solidarity, many people stated their frustration with federal agents. Richard Horner says it's personal for him.
My daughter is also a nurse at the VA, and that's the reason I came out here, even though it's cold, and I had something else to do. I said I need to be there for her.
Another attendee, Vilega, provided only his first name in fear of retaliation.
I'm an immigrant myself, and it feels as though the administration doesn't want us here, and it feels stressful, but it can't end there. We just gotta stand with one another and show love to all immigrants and remind that we're welcome here, and any person on this soil needs to be protected and not have to worry about leaving their home.
Vilega said people sharing candles and shivers reminded him of the support that exists despite the tragedy of Preti's death.
I love that out here it's a big feeling of solidarity, standing up with one another, and instead of being at home and watching the news and feeling isolated and alone, I've been looking at strangers who smile to me and give me the sense of I got your back and we're here with one another. We literally said that to one another.
Anne Marie Patterson Powell, a VA nurse and one of the organizers of the vigil, wants to make it clear to the Trump administration that the shooting of Preti would not scare them.
These things that they're doing is an attempt to divide us as a community. But in fact, it's doing the opposite. It's uniting us as a country against these cruel and inhumane things that they're doing to our neighbors and our friends and our colleagues.
And with the death of Preti, her frustration only grew.
This is not about immigration. This is not about ridding our country of murderers and criminals, as they say. It's not. And we all know it's not, and they know we know.
Wednesday, the Department of Homeland Security placed the two agents who fired at Preti on administrative leave. DHS says it's investigating the shooting while President Trump has appointed his border czar, Tom Homan, to take over the Minneapolis operation. Homan has pledged to eventually draw down the number of agents in the city. In Durham, I'm Anthony Guerra Flores.
Listening to Carolina Connection, the weekly student newscast from UNC Hussman School of Journalism and Media. I'm Rachel Moody.
And I'm Maddie Policastro. UNC Health no longer provides gender-affirming care to people under 19. That new policy exceeds state law, which only bans treatments for minors under 18. Now, doctors at the Triangle's largest healthcare system are working to connect their patients with outside care. Alice Scott has more.
Karen Kimmel Scott is a primary care doctor who works at UNC Health's six-story East Town Medical Building. She works in internal medicine, which means she only treats people over 18. She provides these patients with general care, such as routine checkups and physicals. For her transgender patients, this care often involves administering gender-affirming treatments, like hormone therapy.
And this is such a crucial part of their health.
But a recent UNC Health policy change has limited Kimmel Scott's ability to administer this care.
I had recently seen an 18-year-old who had been so excited, had been waiting to turn 18, had come to an appointment with their parent, and we suddenly had to say, hey, we can't start now. but my promise to you is when you turn 19, I'll have a prescription waiting for you.
UNC Health no longer provides gender-affirming care to individuals below the age of 19. North Carolina state law only bans the treatment for those under 18. Mark Pless is a Republican state representative from Haywood and Madison counties. He was a primary sponsor of the 2023 law that prohibits minors from receiving this care.
It was important to give them space to grow up, give them space to develop their own way of thinking, and then if they chose to do it later, let them choose as an adult.
A spokesperson for UNC Health says its policy change responds to unsettled federal guidelines. President Donald Trump signed an executive order banning gender-affirming treatments for those under 19 last January. It has since been met with legal challenges. Kareth Conron, an adjunct associate professor at UNC's Gilling School of Global Public Health, studies the impact of gender-affirming care bans. She says UNC Health's new policy could affect up to 2,200 transgender 18-year-olds in North Carolina.
Gender-affirming care allows somebody to present themselves in the world in a way that is consistent with how they feel. My first experiences with young people who were transitioning was when I was a volunteer working at LGBTQ youth programs. And I remember just how joyful and animated young people were when they were first beginning gender-affirming hormone therapy.
But UNC Health isn't the only provider that's changed its rules surrounding gender-affirming care. Atrium Health implemented the same policy over the summer. The two providers make up the largest healthcare systems in the state.
And this specific rule change is so cruel. It's so cruel and unusual to suddenly make the age of consent 19 for something that benefits so many.
At UNC Health, Kimmel Scott says practitioners are referring their patients who can no longer receive gender-affirming treatments to outside healthcare. This often includes local primary care facilities or clinics that cater to LGBTQ health. Some medical providers are now feeling a strain. NC Newsline reported that Duke Health, which still offers gender-affirming care to 18-year-olds, is facing increasing demand at its child and adolescent gender care clinic. The clinic's website stated that staff are working on strategies to accommodate this influx. For now, new patients will have to wait several months before receiving care. In Chapel Hill, I'm Alice Scott.
Rent prices across the nation and in Chapel Hill have significantly increased over the past decade. That's putting pressure on many businesses, but Carolina Connections' Allison Helms found that the owners of some local establishments are standing strong.
The Gathering Place in Chapel Hill has become a social hub for students and locals in the Chapel Hill-Durham area since its opening in 2021. After signing the lease, owner Joshua Goodsell spent $100,000 on renovations.
I was not wanting to open a game store, but with the 30-tap bar, it just kind of made sense. And that's how we got started.
Considering all of the renovations needed for the space, Goodsell was able to sign a lower rent for $2,500 a month.
It's maybe going to be more expensive, and I had negotiated it down because of uncertainty and the amount of work that we had to do. Maybe they were asking $3,500 a month or something, and I think we got it down to that comfortable $2,500.
Today, the Gathering Place pays almost $8,000 in rent, but with the addition of the upper and lower areas of the building as Alpha Pi Pizza Restaurant, which Goodsell also owns.
I feel like our rent hasn't gone up. We've just taken over more real estate.
With a mix of renovation costs and a good relationship with his landlord, Goodsell considers his rent pricing a mix of luck and hard work. Just a block over from the Gathering Place lies Momo's Masters, a Nepalese street food restaurant specializing in dumplings. Owner Ramesh Dahal is still paying the same rent today he paid 4 years ago when first opening in fall 2021.
So compared to any other location restaurant, this is the rent-wise, this is the perfect rent.
Dahal highlights his relationship with his landlord.
Well, I think we have a good relationship as far as payment goes to the landlord, so rent is the same.
Carrboro economic developer John Hartman Brown says that following the pandemic, rent stabilized in the Carrboro area, which Chapel Hill closely mirrors.
I would assume that it is a fairly similar pattern because our commercial markets are, of course, very similar.
Brown says this is a welcome event due to the increases seen in rent before and during the pandemic.
I haven't seen an increase
in a driver for rents to go up. I think there's been less of a demand.
That's Nathan Millian, the commercial property manager of Carmel Mall for 35 years. Millian says the rent he charges is not cause for people to move elsewhere.
I don't believe we're have lost anybody because of just our rent was too high.
Considering his luck, Joshua Goodsell says it is difficult for other business owners in the area.
Finding real estate elsewhere is super tough, even if it's warehouse real estate.
In Chapel Hill, some spaces can rent for up to $30 per square foot.
2,000 square foot spaces renting for, you know, $10,000 a month.
Whether rent is increasing or stabilizing, Goodsell says, even good concepts can go out of business. As for Goodsell, he is here for the long run.
You know, we plan on being here for the next 20 years and being a staple in the Chapel Hill community for a long time.
Whether it be luck, hard work, or a good relationship with a landlord, Goodsell is hoping other like-minded businesses find their rent-friendly home here. In Chapel Hill, this is Allison Helms.
On UNC's campus, Davis Library is expanding into the realm of artificial intelligence. Its new Library AI Studio is designed to help students explore AI tools. This is a part of the university's larger initiative to become a leader in the field. Zoe Barrett attended the opening.
Students, faculty, and staff gathered at the ribbon cutting to explore the new space and hear from university leaders about what artificial intelligence could mean for learning at Carolina. Vice Provost for the University Libraries, Maria R. Estorino, said while technology continues to change, the role of libraries stays the same.
This is a space to experiment, to create, and to explore generative AI responsibly with support and with trusted guidance.
Estorino emphasized that the studio is especially for students, many of whom are encountering AI at a time when it will shape both how they learn and how they will work as they enter their careers. One of the central goals for the Library AI Studio is access. Michelle Rodell, Associate University Librarian for Health Sciences, said the libraries want to avoid a future where only students who can afford paid subscriptions have access to advanced AI tools.
You know, early days, back when we started to conceive of the idea, we had ChatGPT 3.5 and 4.0, and so some students, it was creating a have and have not situation, right? So another form of the digital divide where some students would have access to a paid version of a resource that performs better and some would not. So when we set out to do this, it was really to democratize access to AI.
That access comes largely through Prompt Lab, a virtual AI platform built by UNC Libraries that allows students to explore multiple generative AI models using their Onion login. For students, the studio also addresses something harder to measure, fear. First-year undergraduate Lila Maggiore is one of the inaugural Library AI Fellows and says many students feel uncertain about how AI will impact their futures.
From my experience, there's a lot of fear surrounding AI usage because we don't know what's going to happen. We don't know how it's going to impact jobs and stuff. And I feel like the important thing that what I was looking for and what my peers are looking for is a space to talk, a space to test things out without having the consequences of like not knowing information. I feel like this space gives that exactly. Like we can get asked questions, we can get information, we can have open discussions about AI so we can like mitigate the fear that we feel and get the information we need.
As part of her fellowship, Maguria is researching the environmental impact of AI data centers, including water use, electricity demand, and the effects of local communities. Library Leaders says projects like that show us why the studio isn't about telling students whether to use AI, but helping them understand it. The Library AI Studio is now open on the second floor of Davis Library, offering workshops, tools, and human support for students across disciplines. For UNC Libraries, the goal is simple: access for all and the knowledge to use artificial intelligence thoughtfully.
At the University Libraries, our commitment is simple. Every Tar Heel should have access to AI tools and the knowledge to use them thoughtfully and ethically. We're not here to tell you to use it. We're not even here to tell you what to use it for. But we are here to help you understand AI and to make informed choices in a world transformed by it. So Carolina, welcome to your Library AI Studio.
While AI and technology is constantly evolving, this is the next chapter for UNC students and their access to the newest technology. In Chapel Hill, I'm Zoe Barrett.
Last week, the Buddhist Walk for Peace passed through the Triangle on its way to Washington, D.C., the monks' 2,300-mile journey, which began in Fort Worth, Texas, aims to gain federal recognition for a Buddhist holiday.
The group was welcomed by local officials and hundreds of supporters who brought gifts and bowed their heads in respect. Here's Lauren Mallett with more.
It's dark and cold as the sun sets on the side of U.S. Highway 64. Hundreds of people line the roadway. Anticipation shows in the crowd's low murmur as they wait to see the famed group of Buddhist monks trek by on their 2,300-mile walk for peace across the South en route to the U.S. Capitol. Among the crowd are Cassandra Chrisman and Jennifer Aponte. The two are laughing and smiling like old friends, both carrying white flowers. United by the common values of the Walk for Peace, the two just met, here on the side of the road.
It definitely has brought us together because now we've exchanged information, so it's not only bringing people together, unified for the Walk of Peace with the monks, but also just together who are on the sidelines, being gratified to be able to even see this.
Yeah. I mean, how fortunate are we?
When the monks finally arrive, the crowd falls silent. Supporters hold out flowers, bowing their heads in respect as the group quietly marches by. Beginning in Fort Worth, Texas on October 26th, it's day 90 of the monks' journey. When they finally reach Washington, D.C., their goal is to speak before Congress, proposing that the Buddhist holiday Vaisak, which commemorates the birth, Day of Enlightenment, and death of Buddha, be recognized as a federal holiday. Lauren Leave is an associate professor of religious studies at UNC and a published researcher of Theravada Buddhism. She says that recognition of Vaisak on a national level would be a large step for representation of Buddhism in the United States and in uniting the Buddhist community worldwide.
This walk imagines itself as a way of showing what Buddhism is, that it's not political, that it's not about identity, that it's not exclusionary, that it's not, you know, trying to convert anybody.
Leaf says that she hopes the walk is remembered as the beginning of something larger.
Providing the spark for ordinary people to recognize one another as fellow human beings, as allies and partners, despite our differences.
The monks' final stop and resting place for the night is Apex High School. At the school's football stadium, another crowd greets them. Onlooker Mackenzie Buschholz says she came to support the monks because she believes in their message.
Now, anybody that's willing to walk 2,300 miles for something they believe in, especially something as positive as this, I think it's important to come out and support them. So I'm glad that there's a huge crowd here, and you know what they're doing is special. This is a really crazy time politically and just emotionally, and they're out here promoting peace and unity and compassion and all the things that we really need.
Local leaders make a short proclamation and exchange gifts with the monks before passing one of them the microphone.
Take a deep breath.
The monk calmly guides a meditation through the loudspeakers, sharing Buddhist values with the audience. The crowd closes their eyes, placing their hands over their hearts, mindfully following the monk's instructions. One woman cries,
"Without compassion, there will be no peace."
In Apex, I'm Lauren Mallett.
Although I'm still slipping on the ice from last weekend's storm, forecasters say more winter weather is on the way. UNC has canceled classes and activities today, and students are eagerly waiting to hear how long they'll be out of class. From snowmen to snow cream, Carolina Connection's Javon Hun went around campus to ask students about their winter traditions.
It ain't even cold outside, now where I'm from.
So my first name is Fadil, and my last name is Adeniyi. I'm an exchange student from Nigeria, and for my plans, I'll be indoors majorly, but I'll do some form of sledding and have some fun, enjoy the snow, yeah, basically.
Hi, my name is Jordan Holly. I'm a class of 2026, and my snow tradition is being in the house drinking hot cocoa or coffee.
Standing in the heat and doing ice cold.
My name is Diego Martinez. I'm a freshman, and for my snow days, I like to go out in the snow with my dogs because they really like the snow.
My name is Manny Mbwendi. I'm a freshman, and for my snow plans, I'll be inside playing Roblox and video games with my friends.
Hi, everyone. My name is Indigo Jordan. I'm a first year, and I plan on sledding down the big hill going to the Dean Dome again. Go Heels!
My baby's in town, and we're gonna do some winter things.
Thank you for listening to Carolina Connection. We are a production of the UNC Hussman School of Journalism and Media. We hope you enjoyed your time with us. Our technical directors are Kevin Paris and Kalias Galbraith Val DeCanto. I'm Rachel Moody.
And I'm Maddie Policastro. There's more to be discovered at carolinaconnection.org. You can also find our stories on Instagram, Facebook, Blue Sky, or wherever you get your podcasts. Now, back to weekend programming on 97.9 The Hill.